morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're going to turn the page and now turn our attention to Yahweh. And these topics are actually related. You know, you may say, well, that news hour was was a bit depressing, and that we're coming to realize just how vile the enemy of Islam is to living in a civil society. That really is a huge part of Yahweh's message. Yahweh wants us to know that religion is an awful thing, that it is a murderous thing, that it is a beguiling thing, that it is a damning thing. And God wants you to understand the consequence of choosing to embrace religion. Those who embrace religion, rather than endearing themselves to God, do exactly the opposite. They preclude themselves from being known by God, and they preclude themselves from being embraced by God. And so in this second hour, we're going to return to a caller whose name is Rod. He's from Indiana. Rod made some comments at the very end of our program yesterday. He said that he had come to agree with much of what he had read and seen. I don't know if it was from An Introduction to God or Yata Yam, perhaps even questioning Paul. Maybe even from the programs I've done on Yada Yada Radio over the past, but that thought there just had to be another way, some other option perhaps to be able to become part of God's family than the very singular, strict, narrow, unpopular way that God has delineated in his Torah. So rather than me trying to put words into Rod's mouth, we promised that we would have a bit of a discussion on this topic today. Hello, Rod. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. You said that I think there's another way than the straight and narrow. No, I don't agree with that. I just think that...
Okay, I'm sorry.
You don't have the... I think you're missing part of the picture of a picture.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, I do agree with you about everything. I just, I say, yeah, that's right. That's right. He's right. And then you hit the business of, like yesterday, poof, they're all gone. Well, I think that from Yah's point of view, that you're right. It is poof, but there's, it's not a permanent poof necessarily. At least that's what I believe, and I wanted to share some things with you that maybe you hadn't considered.
Okay, and, Rod. Before you share those things, could let me just for our audience, let me share with them the narrow, restrictive, single file path that God has provided for us to be part of his covenant family. Because based upon what you've said, I think you and I, and most importantly, he agrees that there is an absolute guaranteed means to becoming part of his family and being saved by him. And so as we consider whether or not there might be another option, let's at least clearly articulate the option that we know, the path we're going to delineate the path that we know for certain is reliable and true. Because then, so long as people know that path and they embrace it, then they have no concern whether or not there may be another way. Is that fair?
Yes. Okay. I'm not saying there's another way. I'm just saying there's more to the way. That's all.
Okay. All right. All right. Let me articulate the path that Yah has provided, and we'll go to the potential that there's more to it. Yahweh in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and Torah means teaching, and therefore his teaching and guidance that permeate his entire revelation to us, introduced his one and only covenant. And in this covenant, which is based on family, he presented five terms and conditions that we need to understand and embrace if we are to become part of his family. Salvation, then, is a byproduct of the covenant. Those who think that they should seek to be saved and then develop a relationship with God have it in the reverse order. The five terms and conditions of the covenant are as follows. First, that we walk away from our country, that we walk away from Babel, which is religious and political corruption. unless we are willing to walk away from Babel, we cannot enter into a relationship with God. Therefore, if you are religious, if you are political, if you're patriotic, you are precluded from having a relationship with God, and you are precluded from being saved by Him. That's the first requirement. The second is that instead of relying on human institutions, we come to rely and upon and trust Yahweh. And the only way that you can rely on someone is to know what they have to say, as to come to know them. And the only way you can trust someone is to understand what they're offering. So trust and reliance upon Yahweh requires, in advance of that decision, you to come to know Him and to understand what it is that He is offering. God can be known in only one place, through His Torah. And the terms and conditions that He is offering to participate in this covenant are revealed in but one place, His Torah. The third requirement, caveat, if you will, condition, codicil of the covenant, is to, God says, walk to me and become perfect. There's only one path in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to God. There's only one means of perfection provided in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and that one means is repeated and presented many, many times. It is the seven steps that form the pathway to God known as the Mikra. The Mikra are invitations to be called out and to meet with God. It is a seven-step path to God. The doorway begins with Passover. The threshold into God's home that makes us perfect is unleavened bread. This enables us, once inside of His home, to be adopted by Him. Once we become immortal, once we become perfect, we are adopted into God's family. On the fourth step along the way, Shavua, seven Sabbaths, we are enriched by His Torah teaching. We are empowered by His set apart spirit, which leads to Teruah, trumpets, where we are called to share God's message now that we are prepared to do so and to issue a warning that there is but one path to Him. The sixth of the seventh steps is Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, where we were invited to come into the presence of the maternal aspect of God's light, His set-apart spirit. And that leads us to God's home on Sukkah, where we get to camp out with our Heavenly Father forever. That is the path to God. The fourth of the terms and conditions then goes on to say, observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider this covenant. It is by examining and considering and coming to know and understand the covenant and all that it represents, its conditions and benefits, that we are able to become part of God's family, and that this thereby enables God to save us. And the final condition that is part of the covenant, this lone and narrow path to God, is that as parents, we sign our names, our signature, on this covenant agreement, vowing that we will do the single most important thing in the universe, which is to raise our children so that they become God's children, that we teach our children the Torah, and as a sign of this, we agree to circumcise our sons. That is the narrow path to God. That is the exclusive path that is presented in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That is the one path that we can trust. Now, Rod, you say that there may be a not so much another option, but more to the this story than that. Why don't now you present what your thinking is in this regard?
Okay, with the Feast of Weeks,
yes,
you have the main grain harvest,
mm-hmm.
which is symbolic of the harvest of saved souls. At least that's the way you would term it. I'm not so sure that's the best way to put it, but at least we know what we're talking about. This is the Feast of Weeks is a period which represents a harvest of saved souls.
Right. There are three harvests among the seven Mikra. The first is Bakutim, where the firstborn children enter into God's family, are born spiritually into His family. The second harvest is Shavua, which is seven Sabbaths or weeks, whereby God's children are enriched and empowered. And then the third harvest is Teruah. It's symbolic of the time that that Yahweh will come and harvest his children from the earth before the beginning of the tribulation. So those are the three harvests. So go on. We're in agreement thus far.
All right. The to seven oneself is to make a binding oath, and if you look at the seven Sabbaths or the Feast of Weeks, what that's like, to me, I would take that as Yah saying that he is making it like a super binding promise that there's going to be a big harvest of saved souls. Now,
okay, can I interrupt you again? Because I just, well, I'm in complete agreement with everything you've said, and it doesn't even matter if we don't agree. It's all really it matters is that we're searching for truth within Yah's testimony, and that's always a productive thing. But I want the audience to understand how you came to conclude that there was a promise or an oath that was associated with the Shabbat. You are correct in saying that. The Hebrew word for seven, which is the same word that is used, the root of the word that is used for Shabbat, for Sabbath, the primary meaning of that word is oath or promise. So to have Shabbat Shavua, 7 weeks, seven sevens, it is really saying this is a promise based upon seven. This is the kind of the ultimate promise or oath. And in relationships, Rod, and this is another place we're going to agree. In relationships, mutuality is essential. So God is making a promise to us, and we're making a promise to Him. He is giving us an oath. We are giving an oath to Him. So thus far, I think that what you're saying is completely consistent with Yah's testimony. Go ahead.
Okay. Tacked right on in the right after the Feast of Weeks is Shavuot, which I've always understood as being the Feast of First Fruits, when the wave sheaf offerings are waved. And I don't know that you have that view of Shavuot, but without going into whether we agree or not on that, you do have first fruits, right? Or
correct. What we've got the music, Rod. We have the music playing, so we're going to have to pause here. But we'll pick up this conversation on the other side of the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can call us and engage in this discussion by dialing 877-300-7645. It's a toll-free line. Rod ended the last segment by saying something that I wanted to clarify, and then we'll go on with his thought process. The order of the seven invitations to meet with God and to be called out of this world are first is Pesach, which is Passover. The second, the following day, is unleavened bread, which is matzah. The third is Bukurim, which is first fruits. Those three happened 3 days in a row. Yahusha actually observed those 3 days on Mount Moriah in 33 CE, which was year 4000 Yah. His body became the Passover lamb. His soul went to the place of separation to resolve the issue of our sin, unleavening our souls of sin. And then on the third day, his soul and Yah's spirit were reunited, and he was brought back to the Father as the Father's child. Those three events occur in three successive days. Then seven sevens later, Shavuah, is when the spirit of Yahweh enriches us with Yah's Torah teaching and empowers us with her spirit so that we can become not only more effective witnesses, but also we are able to grow as God's children. And Rod said it's kind of like a super oath, that the adoption process is kind of like stamped, sealed, signed, and the actual fruit or the benefits, the harvest, the reaping, if you will, of all of the wonderful promises of becoming God's child are realized on Shavuot. It's the tangible expression of all of those things. So Shavuot does not follow weeks. Shavuot and weeks are the same thing, and they follow by sevens, Bukurim. And Bukurim, which means firstborn child, is, in fact, first fruits. So that clarification, Rod, please continue.
Okay, well, the Bukurim business, the third day,
all
the feast of first fruits is... something that is new to me. I kind of throws a wrench in my trying to say that I think that there's more to it. But
Rod, let me stop you there just for a moment.
Yes.
I do think that that's probably an issue that I think you've got the days out of order here. But I want to confirm something that you just said. I want to, rather than you feeling like, well, maybe I need to think this through again and then let me try this another time, I want to affirm something that you just said. You said, I think there's more to it. I agree. I absolutely agree. You know, I've now written like 7,000 pages on these related topics, all derived from the oldest witnesses. And every time that I approach it, like the last time I went through the Shavua chapter of Yariyah, I doubled its length. Every time that you dive into any one of these profound subjects that is essential to our relationship with God and to our salvation, you end up learning much more than you previously knew. I mean, I know I do. That's why I'm constantly editing and augmenting the books, Yada Yah, and also An Introduction to God, is there's always more to it. And personally, I would tell you that I think that I may now know a fraction of 1% of the full majesty and brilliance and wonderful nature of what God's offering through these days. That 1% is stunningly important. It's profound. It's insightful. It's easily sufficient to be able to place your trust and reliance upon God. But there's absolutely more to it. There always is. God is so much smarter than we are. And the fact that he wrote his testimony in Hebrew, which is such a profound language for revelation. You know, the thing that I find, Rod, is that when I really devote myself to looking at any one statement that God makes about any of these profound subjects, and I apply the totality of the stems, the conjugations, and the moods to them, the mind expansion that is a result of increased knowledge is to the point of being stimulating. Probably the most fun thing that I could ever possibly have happened. And so, Rod, I'd like you to stay with us and let's talk about how there is more to all of this and how we can learn more by understanding the uniqueness of the Hebrew language that Yahweh used to reveal his teachings and his instructions and his guidance to us. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling us toll-free, 877-300-7645. Right now we're having a conversation with Rod, who premise thus far has been that there is more to learn, perhaps to understand about not only the covenant and its terms and conditions, but also about the mikre, the path that God has provided by way of invitation to us so that we could come to know him become immortal, become perfected, become adopted into his family, become enriched and empowered to become effective witnesses and to be reconciled in a relationship with him so that we can live with him forever. And so, Rod, recognizing that we're on the same page here, we're always open to, in fact, cherish the whole idea of learning more. It's the most fun I think we can have. Would you like to kind of pursue your thought process?
Well, I'm going to change just a little bit. What you just said kind of jogged something in my mind.
Okay.
If we take the example of Pesach, there
yes.
was a fulfillment in Egypt when Yahweh brought the children out of the
mm-hmm.
land of the crucible of Egypt.
Yes.
Okay, and then, let's see.
There was even a fulfillment, Rod, before then. The first fulfillment.
Shock, it goes deeper when the Messiah was crucified. You have more depth there, and it's the mm-hmm. The other Moed Mikre, I think, are also like that, and they're not necessarily in order in their fulfillment. Anyway, my personal way of thinking.
Rod, I'm going to stop you there. It is absolutely true that there are dress rehearsals and that there are historic fulfillments of the Moed Mikre, but they are always in order. Now, for example, the first Moed Mikre, the first invitation for us to be called out and to meet with God, is Passover. The first one that received a dress rehearsal in history is Passover. It's when Abraham was asked by Yahweh to take Ishmael, his son, to Mount Moriah. Every aspect of that story mirrors what Yahusha would do 2,000 years later, in exactly the same place, in exactly the same way. And ultimately, the conclusion of that story is God saying, don't sacrifice your son. I'm going to sacrifice mine. And so the dress rehearsal where Abraham takes Isaac, Yishak, laughter, to Mount Moriah is a dress rehearsal that helps us better understand what would happen 2,000 years later and what has now happened almost 2,000 years from our perspective now looking back. It is a dress rehearsal that explains the event. Fulfillment of Pesach, which was the first fulfilled historically with the children of Yisrael, was also designed to help us understand what the Messiah would do, that he would in fact be the Pesach lamb, that he would be the Passover lamb, and that his blood would be spilled on the upright pillars of the doorway to life. And so just as the firstborn sons were those who were spared, it would be the firstborn son of Yah who would be sacrificed, his blood serving as the Passover lamb, as a sign that we had accepted and embraced God's offer, that we would walk through that doorway that is of life. When Yahusha, the Messiah, came to fulfill, and he is the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, so he is Yahweh fulfilling the Moed Mikre himself. When Yahusha came to fulfill these invitations, to enable these promises, to honor the oath that he had made to us, to open the doorway to life and to perfect us through removing sin from our soul by paying the punishment, which is separation from God, his soul going into Sheol in our stead, and then being the living embodiment of first fruits. When he did that, he fulfilled these days on the right day and in the proper order. With God, order is always important. He is not a jumbled chronological mess. He does everything in a specific order, and he always is consistent with his promises. He is dependable in that way. Just as the fourth of these Mikre has also been fulfilled, Shavuah. It was fulfilled on the precise day, 7 Shabbat, after the fulfillment of Bukurim, of first fruits. And just as that has occurred in the right order and on the right day, we can be assured that Teruah, which is the harvest of saved souls prior to the tribulation, it will also occur on the right day, and it will be the next Moed Mikra that will be fulfilled. We are fast approaching the next celebration of Teruah. And we can be assured that exactly 2,000 years, 40 Yobel, from the time that Yahusha fulfilled, along with the set-apart spirit, in the right order, on the right day, Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and seven Sabbaths, that he will return on Yom Kippurim, on the right day, in the right place, in Jerusalem. And that 5 days later, we will begin the millennial Shabbat on Sukkah, exactly on that day, doing everything in God's precise order, exactly as he laid it out and described it, providing guidance to us in his Torah teaching. All right, Rod, with that understanding, this is only the only one place where we have had a bit of a disagreement, and I hope you don't mind me jumping in on in that regard, because it's, I think it's important to understand that God does use dress rehearsals. There's another dress rehearsal, by the way. Sukkah. There has been a dress rehearsal of Sukkahs so that we would come to better understand it. Yael Conner writes about it. You know, when he's talked about the Word becoming flesh, the Torah becoming flesh, and tabernacling with us, God, of course, was going to have this child that was born, the son who was given, camp out with his creation on Sukkah. That would be the day that he would come join us, enter our physical and mortal realm, would be on Sukkah. And that was affirmed by Yael Conner, who said that, and he came and he tabernacled with us. Tabernacles is the most common name for Sukkah shelters. So go ahead, Rod.
Okay. Well, we're, I'm at right here trying to organize my thoughts. The only thing I can say at this point is when I agree with you, which is most of the time, except that I think in this one point, it fits into my way of thinking that I already have, and I say, that's right. But you have actually the whole business of Passover,
mm-hmm.
Pesach. There's been three times when I've spent a whole week over the past 40 years trying to make sense out of things.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to do.
Small part. And it gets really involved. And then when you get the business of the Masiah's offering, I guess sacrifice, whatever it should be called, I don't understand a lot of this. I've gone along with it in Christianity, but I just don't have the full picture yet. And I
okay.
used to be a member of a church that broke up over where to put Paul, a worldwide church of God, what to do with him. And
boy, am I glad to hear that. I mean, there is really where people within the a church, which, by the way, is a pagan organization. There's no
right,
God. Yeah, God doesn't have a church.
Yeah.
But it would the very fact that an organization that was conceived by Paul. Paul is the founder of the Christian church. He's the founder of the Christian religion. That an organization founded by Paul would have members that would say, "I think we need to question Paul, and we got to figure out where we put him." That is such wonderful news that that people would say, wait a minute, Paul's testimony is the antithesis of Yahusha's testimony, and Yahusha's testimony is identical to Yahweh's testimony. Therefore, how do we relate to Paul when he's telling us the opposite thing?
Yeah, I first started to have a relationship with, well, I didn't realize it was Yahweh. But this was back when I was in high school, 1966.
Wow. Boy, that is encouraging.
I was going over on Sunday mornings for a class with one of our high school teachers. He said he can't talk about religion in class, but if you want to come over to his house, well, I did. All right, at the same time, I was reading, and the what Yahusha was saying in Torah was still very much in effect.
Of course.
But we should be keeping the Sabbath and all this stuff. My dad went to this in Sunday school. He was telling me about that back like in the 20s.
Good for him.
You know, you've got what Yahusha says, and then there's what Paul's saying. Well, they just get all bent out of shape, you know, like, well, you know, but Paul. And anyway, I am so thankful to be rid of Paul.
Oh, boy.
He's been a plague for, like, ever and ever for well over 45 years. And what to me seems like sad is that the churches I've gone to have gone over and over and over trying to justify what Paul says and say, no, what it seems to say is wrong. It, you know, and they point to other scriptures where he says what he says is right. But I've had, you know, most of my adult life wasted listening to sermons that are all about Paul, and the rest of the whole of the Debar of God has just been pushed aside. I am so happy to be rid of Paul.
Yes. Rod, I think that's the reaction all of us have had, and that's why I was so encouraged to hear about both your father and also of the small group of people that may have broken away from the Christian church. Yosha is very clear that Yosha is the actual name for the person that we have misnamed Jesus. That means Yahweh saves. With the living embodiment of the Torah. He walked right out of the pages of the Torah. He was Torah observant. If you claim to be a follower of Yosha, even if you don't know his name, and you are not Torah observant, then you're living a lie. He was Torah observant. He affirmed in all of his public statements that the Torah was the single most important document and nothing in the Torah would be annulled. And Paul said exactly the opposite thing. So you cannot put your trust in both Paul and Yosha, as they were opposites. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break. To the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. I am your host, Yada. We are currently in a discussion with Rod. We did have another caller that we've asked to call back on Monday that wanted an insight on the called the Feast of Dedication. It's a Maccabean celebration that is better known today as Hanukkah, and we will address that in our program, one of our programs, first part of next week. Rod said something that that he said repeatedly, and that I would like to speak to. He said, "I am just so glad to be rid of Paul." Rod, I don't know if you know this, but the single most embarrassing thing in my life is not being rid of Paul until a matter of about 3 or 4 years ago. I wrote Yada Yah with about 95% focus on Yahweh's testimony, his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and included within that Yosha's testimony. But about 5% of it included citations from Paul. I was a Christian evangelist, which means I promoted Pauline doctrine. It is the single most embarrassing part of my life. I worked very hard to recognize that I'm nobody special, this truth that God has made available to us is made available to all of us. But I thought that if nothing else, the one thing I brought to the table was that I was at least tried to be resolutely rational, and that my one skill seemed to be to make connections so that like the dot-to-dot puzzle as a kid, to connect the dots in such a way that things that seemed unconnected to most could be associated and form a very clear picture so that we might come to understand what is being conveyed. And yet I was beguiled by Paul for most of my life. It wasn't until a good friend of mine in New Zealand, a man named Dode, David, wrote me and said, you know, there's some real problems with Paul, and the Christian church here on the radio is telling us that Paul annulled the Torah, that the Torah cannot save, that the that his testimony, his gospel of grace, has replaced the Torah, and that there are two covenants. Could you do what you've done before, both with Islam and now with Yah's testimony, and verify whether or not Paul has been misunderstood, whether he's been misquoted, whether his testimony is twisted, or whether it's just plain wrong? And I devoted a year of my life to this subject. Rod, you spoke about the great amounts of time that you've devoted in your life to searching and trying to answer questions. And I began to write a book, which is available to you now free, called QuestioningPaul.com. And I began to write that book, and I wrote the first two or three chapters of that book as I began to cover the letter Paul wrote to the Galatians, which is obvious was his first letter. And I began to do everything I could to present whatever it was that Paul was saying from the most positive perspective allowable. And then I reached the part of Galatians where Paul condemned Shimon Kefesh, whom we know as Peter. He condemned Yohanan, whom we know as John. Condemned them. I said, wait a minute, that's just not right. And then shortly after that, I'm reading where Paul says that the covenant which was memorialized on Mount Sinai, which is the covenant as it exists in the Torah, was of Hagar, not of Sarah. That it was enslaving, that it was of the flesh, that it was a cruel taskmaster, that it could not save, and that there was this second and new and different covenant. And I said, that's it. I can't do this anymore. I can't try to justify Paul.
I'm glad you had the fortitude to do that. It has helped me a lot.
And at that point, you know, it was an extremely painful experience at the beginning where you're going back and said, oh, my goodness, you know what this means now is that I've got to rewrite a 2,500-page book, and I've got to exercise it of Paul. We called it a Paulectomy. But I think you're right. Unless you're willing to confront the evidence and deal with the facts, then you can't be rational. God gave us the ability to exercise good judgment through His Nesama for a reason. Rod Boy, I hope you call again. I really enjoyed our conversation today. Let's do it again. This is Shattering Myths.
September is National Preparedness Month, or as we like to call it, Preptember. So cash in on Preptember savings at BePrepared.com. Going on now. Save 21%.